Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Hello and welcome to the Arsenal Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and Giles Aniam and Chris Howard of Gunnerstown. Now, gents, I was going to ask you how the week's been, but I get the sense that that could be quite a dangerous question.
Cowards.
Is that me, my colleagues?
No, nobody within this studio. It's cowards that are in East Midlands. Yesterday at lunchtime, there was a collective of about 20 of them.
What colour were they wearing?
They were wearing red and white. Utter cowards. I have literally printed off a list of descriptive words to describe them. Poltroon, craven, recreate, dastardly, cur, wayface, faint heart, lily livered.
Are these all last used pre-1815?
Panic mongers, scaramouche.
I like that one. Yeah, me too.
Wimps, sissies, chicken-hearted, shirkers, deserters, and milksops. Mm. That is the performance from yesterday, from the performance against Wolves and the performance against Crystal Palace the week before. 9 goals in 3 games, thoroughly unacceptable.
Giles, have you got any archaic terms to add to that list?
No, I think Chris has pretty much covered it. it's just confusing and disappointing really is the fact that Emery doesn't seem to have a clue anymore. I think he had his eye on Wolves. I said that in the last program. I think he had his eye on Wolves. He shouldn't have had his eye on Wolves. He should have played a stronger team at home against Palace. I know that Xhaka or Torreira were just coming back. Well, I would have played him at home in that home game, secure that 3 points, because going to Wolves and going to Leicester, we knew was going to be difficult. You know, at Wolves got completely, I mean, he dominated the first 20 minutes, 28 minutes, and then we got completely dominated. As soon as we get a punch on the nose, that's it. We cower, we fall apart. And again, Leicester on Sunday, I know Michael Oliver didn't help the situation, but once again, we fall apart. I mean, you think that the 1-0 that we scraped at Watford, they were playing with 10 men. They would feel aggrieved that they didn't get any points from that.
This Arsenal team is, what's the complete opposite of mental strength? It's almost farcical that Arsene Wenger at some stage has said, yeah, this Arsenal team, this is a team with mental strength. I don't know if he said it last season, because this is the same similar team to last season, but this is a collective of psychologically scarred, damaged and brittle footballers that, quite frankly, I'm at the stage where I would happily see all of them binned off. That's probably a bit harsh. There's a vast bulk of them that I'd be quite happy to say, away you go, let's just chuck a grenade in there and let's just start again. Because quite frankly, that performance yesterday was a disgrace. The second goal was an utter disgrace. Yeah. Like, I played centre half. I don't think I've ever had a goalkeeper kick the ball from a dead ball situation and I've just watched it fly over my head, bounce 2 times like for a centre forward to get to. And that's amateur. That's like uni football.
Yeah,
talking about professional footballers on hundreds of thousands of pounds a week who cannot even defend simple balls over the top, and that's 2 in the space of a week. Mustafi did it, and then it was Sokratis and Koscielny. And quite frankly, all 3 of them, let's just get rid.
Okay, so you've assessed 2 separate points there. One is the psychological one, that you're saying they're cowards, they're mentally weak, there is a lack of ability to handle, Giles, as you put it, that first punch on the nose. One sight of blood and suddenly we're not having it. The other is more technical. It's basic. It's not being able to defend. Which is more significant?
I think it's a hazardous chemical of all 3. You've got the lack of... nobody knows what his tactics are. I don't think the players understand what he's trying to implement. The second thing is there's a mental weakness across the teams, a disease. It's sitting, it's like a plague. And thirdly, just basic elementary footballing errors. These are individual mistakes we're seeing week upon week upon week upon week. So you can't even blame Emery for the elementary mistakes that each individual is making.
But equally, if you get one bad individual mistake, you look at that as a fan and you go, well, that's really unlucky. That happens. Mm. But at the point where we are seeing every centre-half in the squad do this, at the point where it's a weekly occurrence, is there not a case for, I'm not saying it is Emery's fault, but is there not a case for looking at potential factors? Because actually it shouldn't be this consistent.
That's what I'm saying. It's the combination of three hazardous chemicals all combining to come up with this distorted outcome. I mean, I look at the players and I think to myself, there must be a disconnect or some sort of short circuit in your brain for you to allow someone like Koscielny, his experience, allowing that ball to float over his head. I mean, we talk about Mustafi. Everyone jumps down Mustafi's throat. I've done it. Jumps down Mustafi's throat as soon as he makes a wrong decision. Someone of Koscielny's standing, he's been our best defender, I would say, through the course of the season when he's been available. But for someone of Koscielny's standing to do something like that shows me that, you know, there's something deep seated.
Well, I think for me, there's two things. There are two different Arsenal teams. There's the Arsenal team at the Emirates and there's the Arsenal team at the away from home, which says to me there's a massive psychological issue within the club because you can't have the same players on the same sized football pitch playing in the same shirts against the same opposition performing so differently. That's a psychological issue from my perspective. But from a technical perspective, again, I agree with you. You've got a player like with Koscielny's experience. If there's a ball that's in play, and you've got a great ball, and Maddison plays a ball into the channels, and Jamie Vardy, who's obviously got a beating of pace for Koscielny, gets in behind him, and he beats him for pace and scores. You're going to say, well, Koscielny's been played, he's been overplayed, he's knackered, his legs don't work anyway. Fine, you know, we don't like it, but we can see why it's happened. From a dead ball situation, I keep coming back to that second goal. He's got time to position himself. Even when the ball's struck, right, that's coming towards me. So you take a few steps back or you take a few steps forward to aggressively attack the ball. We did nothing. And not just him, Socrates as well. Yeah. Did nothing.
Didn't
between
come
them.
The cover. No one's...
Total lack of leadership. And I hate to be part of the, you know, passion brigade and, oh, we've got to show passion, no leaders. I hear that from people who don't watch very much football and just winds me up. But actually, it does feel like it. There's an element of that as well. There's no leadership in the team. Perhaps there's no real leadership at the club. That even stems from the top. And, you know, we might as well chuck Kroenke in here as well because the guy is an absent owner that has offered nothing since he arrived. He has not benefited Arsenal Football Club in the slightest. He's an absolute waste of an owner.
I was expecting a more archaic term there, Chris. You set the bar very high for yourself.
Ofcom.
Of course.
I'm reserving that.
You're being well
I'm reserving that for the break when I can Google some more mean words.
I'm interested by this idea of that lack of leadership coming from the top and where you would most expect leadership in a football club in the form of the manager or the head coach. I think Emery, in a footballing sense, is very, very talented. I think there are moments this season where he's made tactical decisions where you look at it and go, you know what, I would never have thought of that, and that was brilliant. That said, if I offered you a manager who was less tactically astute, but actually was going to get his players up for it, was going to have a scrap, was going to give team talks that got the blood racing, would you rather have that fire than that intelligence?
Giles, do you want to field that question?
No, you can. You're in a role.
I don't know is the answer. Why can't we have both? I'm sure it's possible to have both.
Well, look at Klopp.
Yeah, exactly. There are examples of those managers out there. I just think my problem is I think there's part of me that's thinking Emery has underestimated the mediocre teams in the league. And I'll be honest and say Leicester, Wolves... Wolves are doing well this season. They've got some good players. But Crystal Palace, certainly, they were very mediocre. I saw a Crystal Palace team that essentially, after about 5-10 minutes, thought, this Arsenal team aren't that great. And then Root Wonders on their second goal, and they've come away with 3 points.
Yeah, I go back to my feelings on Emery. I think he's obviously getting to know the Premier League, and he's been given a rude awakening. My problem, my issue with him is he's not getting his point across. He said after the Wolves game that he blames himself for the way that the players played. You know, he blamed himself after the Wolves defeat. And that tells me that you're not getting your point across. And I don't know if it's a breakdown in communication or what, you know, but if that's the case, get a translator in. You know, communicate to the guy in Spanish and get somebody else to speak to them in English. I think he did a Sky Sports interview the other day, and for the first time I remember, he actually had a Spanish translator. He spoke in Spanish. And it was so much clearer. Like, the translator was able to interpret what he was saying. It's so much clearer. Just do it in Spanish for now. You know, get somebody else in there to convey what you're trying to say to the players, because there's so much confusion. Like, and again, I want to go back to, you know, against Wolves, we were trying to dominate play. Yesterday, we ceded possession. I've never seen us cede possession
that was
like
horrendous,
that.
Horrendous, wasn't it?
And the thing is, I think it's because he didn't know what else to do, because we're not good. We're not good when we dominate possession away from home. So he's probably thinking, well, what else can I do? Well, let's counter attack them. I know some people say we shouldn't be doing that against Leicester, but I think he probably just thought, you know what? We tried it against Wolves. We got completely overrun. Let's go a different route. Let's try and feel our way into the game. Let them have the ball. We keep our fast, but he brought back Aubameyang and he had Lacazette there. He brought in the two inside forwards in Iwobi and Mkhitaryan. You know, he probably thought, let's feel our way into it, try and hit them on the break and see what comes with it, and then the half-time change it around. But obviously that was... Go on.
The problem is we don't have the athleticism to be a team that hits sides on the counter. We have two pacey forwards in Aubameyang and Lacazette. Lacazette isn't as pacey. Aubameyang has a real sort of raw power, but where's the athleticism to be able to break a counter? I mean, if we're soaking up play defensively and then the ball turns over and so Leicester or any team has committed bodies forward, we've got players like Mkhitaryan that gets the way. Iwobi does have a burst of pace. You give Iwobi that, he's got a bit of athleticism about him. But then you're talking about players like Xhaka. He's not going to be countering. Torreira, not really. Mkhitaryan, not really. Ozil, not really. We don't have that. And that's a fundamental problem with the team composition
but
as well.
But Leicester only had Jamie Vardy, was a player that could frighten us with pace. Madison's not going to go beyond you. Chill was coming from deep. I didn't see anybody apart from Vardy there.
No, but they didn't play like that, did they? They played a possession-based game because Brendan Rodgers has actually changed.
Yeah, but what did Vardy do? He'd hang on the shoulder of the defender, he'd come short and then he'd go long. And then somebody would just clip it, whether it was Pereira or Chua, they'd clip it in. I was looking at our players and I was thinking, Aubameyang can do that. And he's got more grass behind him. He's got more real estate to play into. But nobody was doing it. Nobody had that quickness of mind to think, get the ball, chip it over. They didn't do it. Whether it was him not calling for the ball, and I think I did see him putting his hand up, calling for the ball a few occasions, or he's just not making those runs. And with Aubameyang, I've got to say, his record stands up to scrutiny. So you can't really say he's not worth it. But there are certain parts, elements to his game.
He's frustrating.
That really, really frustrates me. Apart from the goal scoring, I think he hides. I do think he hides a lot of the time.
I take your point, absolutely. But apart from the goal scoring is a big line there. I mean, he's got 19 in the Premier League.
That's why he's right up there at the top. Exactly. That's why you can't, you know, it sounds contradictory. But there are...
No, it's not contradictory at all. And I think you're spot on that he actually does go missing. And he's the kind of player, he's got the kind of reputation where in a game like yesterday, you would expect him to go, you know what, lads, I'm not having this. It's a scruff of the neck job. And Harry Kane would do that. And Sergio Aguero would probably do that. Aubameyang doesn't. Yeah. But equally, you can argue, well, a poacher, if he gets his one goal, as far as I'm concerned, he can go to sleep for the rest of the match because he's done his job.
That is, Aubameyang's football is getting in on the end of things, and we've got a world-class finisher in that. And the problem that we have sits behind Aubameyang, actually. We haven't got the players that, you know, that first game last season when Aubameyang signed and we beat Everton 5-1, and that was what we'd all hoped would be the Arsenal.
He scored an offside goal.
Yeah, but balls in behind. It was balls in behind. It was play teams in. It was vision. It was a play that... But we don't... When was the last time you saw us play a ball in behind?
It's essentially the same players, apart from Torreira and Socrates and Leno. The outfield players, pretty much the same.
Yeah, I mean, Mkhitaryan looks like the ghost of Mkhitaryan, actually. But
And you look at it, you think, there's no player that can play me. Mkhitaryan and Aubameyang had a fantastic relationship at Dortmund. So I don't see... I just don't... There's just something... in these players' minds that stops them from playing their natural games and being proactive. You know, just be proactive, be aggressive. You're Arsenal.
Do you think it might be us? Do you think it might be the pressure of the supporters and the way that we react? Do you think that's a burden for them?
I think what's happened is it's this whole talk about the away form has gotten into their heads, it's got into the manager's head, and it's also got into our opposition's head. They're saying Arsenal are coming this week. We could do them. I think when we go to Burnley, obviously Burnley are safe now, but they'll be looking at Arsenal coming and they'll be like, well, they did them. Watford nearly done them. We could do them.
It's a concerning time to be an Arsenal fan. The form of late has been very, very poor. Of course, as we touched on at Leicester, things as basic as being unable to defend a Route 1 kick from a goalkeeper. And we'll be discussing that in just a moment.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This is Love Sport.
You're listening to the Arsenal Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and Giles Aniam and Chris Howard of Gunnerstown. And now when we go through a traumatic experience, we need to find ways of dealing with that that are healthy. It might be talking to a friend. It might be expressing our emotions more physically. And Chris Howard, you had quite an extreme response to Arsenal's performance yesterday.
Yes, after the game, actually during the game, as soon as Ainsley Maitland-Niles got red carded, I went straight to my drinks cabinet and started drinking the rum, which was very nice, spiced rum. And then after the game, I got told by my wife, we need to go into the garden and do the gardening. So I went into the shed.
Had she met you?
Yeah. I went into the shed, grabbed the biggest spade I could find and continued to pummel the earth and turn over all that soil. That soil has never been so harshly treated in its entire life.
Probably
it
very
was
good
essentially
for it.
Assault. I assaulted the soil.
Chris, there's a number. It's called Samaritans, 0207. Get onto them the next time, yeah? You know what? It's interesting because I've been on social media after that game. A few people have come on social media and they're talking about how our friend Mark was saying that he doesn't know why he bothers anymore. You know, that there's such a disconnect between what the club's doing and how he feels about the club. He's like, well, obviously we're going to Valencia next week, and he's not
you
sure.
You are, I'm not. Yeah, I'm not going through that, mate.
But you said you might spend the best part of a grand go to Baku.
No, he was going to go to Valencia, but they wouldn't let him take his spade on the plane.
But he was saying, you know, that he doesn't know why he bothers anymore. You know, if the club can't bother and the players can't bother hiring, why should he? And another friend of ours, Ricky G, with GDP, said the same as, you know, he said, look, you know, last few years, he's found that he'd rather spend his time doing different pastimes. Mm. You know, like, you know, he can see himself not sort of pursuing going week in, week out or home and away. You know, so much more because there's a disconnect between him and the club. And
do you know what? As well, I would put that down to the direction of the club.
Yeah.
Because of the lack of direction that we've had as a club, it feels like, well, where are we actually going? Are we actually going? Can we see the direction? Can we see the plan? All we've had so far in the last 4 or 5 years is some placating politician in Ivan Useless Gazidis. Mm. Telling us we want to be as big as Bayern Munich. It's words. We've had hollow words or no words from Stan Kroenke. We're going to get nothing more from him now that he's a full owner. Mm. So we as fans, we're in this limbo land watching what looks like listless and rudderless club. And when you look at, often there are little things about football clubs that kind of give you boost. Things like, it's horrible to say, but transfers, where are we going? Stuff like that. I hate transfers. I hate talking about it. It's just, it's an unsavoury part of the game, if you ask me.
Vulgar.
But it is. It's a bit vulgar, isn't it? It's like, which humans are we going to trade for our... which humans are we going to trade for our next season, our next foray into mediocrity? But things like that, you hear stories about, oh, you only got £40 million to spend. Oh, we're one of the top 10 richest clubs in the world. And we, there is, even if we had, even if the owner came out and said, I'll tell you what, I'm going to stick £250 million down. I just don't, having seen the Denis Suarez stuff, which I'm sure we can talk about at some stage, having seen how that's panned out, I don't even trust the club to do the right thing, the make the right decision and put players in that make us feel, make me feel like we're going in the right direction. It just feels like this is a listless, rudderless club in the way that it's run at the moment. And, all right, we've got a new regime. It's not even a year old, but I'm not getting positive vibes at the moment.
And things are looking a bit listless, a bit rudderless on the pitch as well. Of course, they weren't helped against Leicester with a relatively early red card for Ainsley Maitland-Niles. It is the elephant in the studio, gents. First of all, is it a red or is he unlucky? It's two yellow cards.
No, not for me. I mean, it was so early in the game. It was like 7 minutes in or something.
He got his card out very early. Very early. You never see that.
Yeah, I mean, you never see that.
But was it a yellow card foul?
No, not the first one. The second one I thought was, because I thought you can't make that challenge. But I've seen a couple of angles. We were on the socials earlier having a look at it, and it looks like he's gone down really easy for the second one as well.
Well, I was watching Dermot Gallagher earlier on today on Sky Sports, and he was saying the first one, the reason why he was given the yellow is because of the, he had a lot of space to attack Chilwell. And as far as the officials were concerned, he was obstructing him. It was cynical. He was obstructing him. I was like, yeah, okay, but you still see those kind of challenges, and you give him a free kick and that's the end of it. It was 7 minutes in. It's so early in the game. Mm. So now the kid's not going to be playing his natural game. Leicester are going to be feeling that they can get at him. And I felt that Maddison took advantage of that situation, because I saw there were so many angles, you see it on Sky Sports, and he hardly touched him. And it was, and the reason why the official gave him the yellow is because of Maddison's reaction. He over-dramatised it. He went down, he was screaming and whatnot, and he kind of influenced Michael Oliver to give him that second yellow. And as Maitland-Niles walked off, he went up to Maddison and said, that was poor, Mads. Obviously, they're mates from the under-21s. Mm. So he went up to me and goes, look, that was poor. And Mads was kind of a bit coy, a bit sheepish kind of about it. And
so I thought to myself,
yeah, he knew.
Interesting as well, that coming from a player who has been quite heavily linked with Arsenal and could end up at the Emirates at some point. Do you think there was possibly a bit of naivety on show from Maitland-Niles, though, whether or not Maddison did go down easily? He's lost the ball and he's then dived in midfield at a point where actually there isn't any real danger. You just think, Ainsley, you're on a yellow card, mate. Just calm down.
He's young, he's inexperienced, he's probably, poor touch, has let the ball run away, and, you instinctively stick out your leg just to try and stop the play. But again, he hardly touched, even if he did touch him.
Yeah.
It was cynical.
That aside, though, we played, 32 minutes before that, where we were woeful.
Yeah.
And I saw nothing in that opening exchanges to suggest that we were going to be any different from most of the games that we've had away from home of late. So it wouldn't have surprised me if it had finished a gritty defeat 1-0. That wouldn't have surprised me in the slightest.
Possibly
with 11 men.
The outcome wouldn't have been any different. But I think, as I said earlier, I think Emery was thinking, okay, seed possession, feel their way into the game, hit them on the break, let them dominate the ball and then let them come forward, because in Maguire and Johnny Evans, they haven't really got a lot of pace in the central defensive areas, but, it wasn't to be.
It wasn't to be, and unfortunately, it wasn't the only game that Arsenal have lost away from home since we last spoke. It was another disappointing performance, a disappointing result against Wolves. And in just a moment, we'll be asking you, is Emery getting the tactics wrong?
This is Love Sport.
Defeat away to Leicester, defeat away to Wolves. Both of these results Arsenal fans dreaded, both coming, of course, at a crucial stage in the Premier League season. Arsenal's away form has been well documented. It's absolutely woeful. Huddersfield and Blackpool are the only two sides the Gunners have beaten away since Christmas. But even with the potential psychological weaknesses of the players, is Unai Emery getting things right and then finding himself unlucky, or actually is the Spaniard perhaps at least partially to blame?
Yeah, of course. You've got buck stops with the manager always, isn't it? So, yeah, he is to blame. He's found, I don't know, it seems like he's kind of, whatever he evaluated on his way when he had his interview, and you know, when he first came into the club about the Premier League, it's obviously, you know, theory is different from practice, and he's finding it very, very difficult. You know, these teams are savvy. There's a lot of savvy, a lot of canny operators in this league, you know, and you know, coupled with his constant tinkering with tactics and whatnot, you know, chuck on top of it our away day ills, chuck on top of it individuals who just, you know, check out. It's a terrible, terrible, terrible concoction, you know. And, you know, he's some of it has been unfortunate, some of it has to, the blame has to be laid at his door, and, you know, he has to stand up and take it. What I was really disappointed with? He never once comes out and says, well, the players need to take responsibility.
No.
Never once.
He's turning into a bit of a Wenger there, isn't he? You know, protection.
Yesterday he came out and said he was proud. What are you proud about? What was there to be proud about? Apart from Lainez's performance, what was there to be proud about in that performance?
Is it not good to see a manager go, you know what, the buck does stop with me?
Yeah. Well, he said that the other day, and it was kind of like he was blaming himself for not. He was saying that it was my fault that the players didn't perform properly against Wolves, and I wasn't sure where he was laying the blame. Was he saying that it's his fault because the players aren't good enough, or his fault because the tactics weren't great? I wasn't sure what he was saying, you know. But, you know, there comes a time you just got to say, look, these players need to stand up and be counted. And he never says that. He's always kind of protected them and, you know, trying to platitudes and say he was what they're to be proud about.
The best managers, in fact, Arsene Wenger never did it, but if you think about Ferguson, I don't want to talk about Ferguson too much, but one of the things that he was really good at is finding a balance between sometimes he just absolutely chastised the players, and then other times he would defend them to the hilt, even when it seemed like they were indefensible. Like if United had performed poorly, sometimes he would just know to come out and, you know, defend them at all costs. And then other times they'd play poorly, and he would actually just. So it's finding the balance to keep the players motivated, because we all know what Jose Mourinho does. He's essentially he just sets fires. He sets fires up everywhere, and the players react to it for a certain amount of time, and then it just becomes, it falls on deaf ears.
Eventually everything's burnt down, and you're left with a big pile of ash and no job.
Exactly.
With that, where the away form is bad, where obviously, as you say, there needs to be a reaction from these players in some respect, Emery's got a couple of options, right? The first is the mollycoddling. He's going, you know what, lads, don't worry, you're great at football. Mesut, your hair's looking great, the passing's brilliant, you crack on, son. Or, as you suggest, Giles, he stands up in front of the press and does a Chris. He reels off his list. He goes, these players are collie wobblers. They are cowards.
Well, Johnny, not even like in front of the press, but I mean, I don't know what goes on behind. I don't even know what goes on behind closed doors. But he's got to get into them. He's got to tear into them. Whether it's behind closed doors, you don't really want to see it in public. You don't want dirty washing in public, but do it behind. Tear into them.
Maybe he did. We don't know.
You'd hope so. If you're not tearing into them now, when are you tearing into them?
Yeah, I mean, he did have a good goals, time. Nine goals conceded in a week.
In a week.
So that's the first time since May. I've been pulling up
since the World Cup year.
May 1966. Last time Arsenal conceded three goals in a row.
He's got. You know, I really hope that he comes out in the press conference on Wednesday, or, you know, and says, look, it's time for these players to start. I want him to really sort of like give it to them. You know, just let them know that it's unacceptable. The standards are dropping. This is not Arsenal. We need it to, you know, we need to do something for ourselves and for the fans.
I think you're absolutely right there, actually. He can do it on Wednesday because he's G'ing up the players.
Yeah.
And then if we end up, you know, doing the proverbial with the bed on Thursday night, maybe he needs to defend them, like, publicly, but still break into them. But, yeah, he needs to be saying to them, what you've done in this last week is not acceptable. Yeah. You now go out and fix this.
Yeah.
Here's a big question then. Talking of next week, talking therein of the Europa League, of Valencia, for all of these poor performances, for all of this cowardice on the pitch, if Arsenal go and win the Europa League and get Champions League qualification that way, is all forgiven? Is Emery a mastermind? Are the players brave?
He's not a mastermind, but he's bought himself, you know, some real time. And, well, I mean, that would be absolutely amazing.
Win the Europa League, end of season doesn't matter. We're having...
None of this matters. We'll be looking back on this in a couple of months' time and going, you know what? Wasn't it funny when we lost 3-0 to Leicester?
Well, we're looking at it back and saying, we're in the Champions League. Now we've got a bit more money. Now we can see what he's going to do for next season.
Yeah.
Who's he going to bring in?
And so does he get one more year? He gets big investment and one more? Does he get two more?
We hope he gets big investment. We know he'll get the Champions League money, but he may still have to sell some of his assets. We don't know how much more money is going to be available.
I still think, even if we go out against Valencia, if we lose against Brighton this weekend, if we then lose away to Burnley, we finish sixth and we're out of the Europa League.
Make a decision on him.
Really? I think he needs to get another year anyway because, well, it's back or sack, isn't it? Because if they're not going to back him, then what are they expecting? You might as well just go absolutely crazy and say, chuck an Arteta in, see if we can blood some of these young players. You know, we just had the under 18s or 23s have just won the league? 23s have just won the league. Maybe, I'm sounding a bit hyperbolic here, I think, because, you know, a club like Arsenal not going to chuck in a load of youngsters, but I don't know. If he's not being backed, what's the point?
And of course, we might get to a point where we need radical action. It's going badly wrong for Arsenal. What do? You've got to mix it up. You've got to get a response out of the players. So you ring the kit man.
This is Love Sport.
It's the Arsenal fan show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and Giles Aniam, and Chris Howard, who currently has steam coming out of his ears. Both of those fine gentlemen are of Gunners Town. And we're going to discuss now one of the most extraordinary tactical decisions ever seen by a Premier League manager. Obviously not going to plan for Unai Emery at the moment, so he decided to take evasive action. This is a story that's emerged in today's Daily Mirror with the rather sensationalist headline, "Bizarre pre-match routine which has led to Arsenal losing 3 games in a row." Obviously, it's only this that is responsible. Emery has used a member of his support staff, Reed Kitman, to give a rabble-rousing team huddle before a game. We're being told that Amish Manek, who is primarily in charge of organising first-team travel, has been effectively taking the team talks.
It sounds like something out of a window sales sort of team, isn't it? Like David Brent.
Yeah.
Or something from The Office kind of thing.
It's very sort of Mike
Bassett. I'm a kit man first, manager second, probably an entertainer third.
Yeah, it's it doesn't sound great, but I don't know if that's modern football or what. I don't know what you put that down to.
I just think it's really cringy. Yeah. I saw somebody I follow on Twitter, You Are My Arsenal, Michael actually said, is this something to do? Does that speak volumes about Emery's inability to actually drive forward the culture within the club? So he's relying on others to try and create some sort of faux culture, which I think was an interesting take on it, to be honest with you.
It's just another confusing aspect to Emery and the way he kind of tries to convey or implement. And that's what I think. That's where there's there's a breakdown in communication. Something's being lost in translation between him and the players, and it's just kind of symptomatic of everything. You know, I don't know what he's telling them. You know, you see him going crazy on the touchline. You know, I don't know what he's telling him, and you know, sometimes the players are confused. You see him when there's a breaking play. They're saying to each other, "What's he saying? What does he mean? Like, do I stand here? Do you stand there? Do we make a cup of tea?"
Someone asked the kit man.
Yes. Yeah.
I've seen a video of Alex Iwobi shouting to the substitute who came on, "What formation are we playing?"
Yeah.
And oh Lord.
You hear things like that, and it's like, what? Like he's actually mouthing, "What formation are we playing?" And you think, you don't know?
Is it possible that it's Iwobi at fault there?
What
could be? Maybe
or is it bad communication? Is Iwobi not really paying attention?
You never know. Yeah, he could be. Yeah, he might be just daydreaming in lessons.
I tell you what lessons he is daydreaming in finishing. Cause
yeah, my lord,
it
he
seems
should have
to
had
be
one.
The last two or three games, the Crystal Palace game, the ball falls to him right on the edge of the D, and you're thinking any other player. If that falls to Xhaka, Torreira, Ozil, Aubameyang, Lacazette, it's like any of our offensive players, they're all offensive at the moment.
Craven.
Finishes it. Craven. Paul Kroot, was it? Or Paul Toot.
Yeah, there are so many good ones. Shirker is right up there.
He's a Shirker.
Absolute Shirker.
I remember his last season, he said, "No more rashing and linging." I don't know what that means in street talk. But
I don't know what any of that means.
But I think it meant something like, "I'm going to put my foot through it now from now on." You know, because I think it was a training video. And
not practicing what he's preaching then, is it?
Exactly not. And it's just another aspect of his game, which I just think, I I don't see the belief that people have that he's on the cusp of, or he might improve, or he might have a huge upside. I really don't see it, Chris. I watch him and I just think you've got the physical attributes, but you don't use them to the fullest of your ability. You know, you're not aggressive, you're not confident. You know, you're in front of goal. All you're thinking of doing is you're concentrating and putting it on target. Let me make sure that, you know, my technique's right. Keep my head over the ball, foot through the, you know, side foot it, instep. Don't just concentrate on banging it in. Look at Aguero yesterday. He was just, once he got the chance, bang, hit it. Put your foot through the ball. Power. Let the goalkeeper do the rest.
Yeah. I mean, Iwobi is the enigma because he's one of our attacking players. So he should spend most of his time in the final third. But where he does most of his good work is in the middle third,
yeah,
when transition. He's driving past people. And then when he gets into that final third, I have no confidence ever that he is either going to put in a good ball or he's going to finish. And that's just bizarre that one of our attacking players is like that. And people keep saying to me, well, he's only like 23.
Really old. 4 years in the first team setup.
Yeah, it's you need to be further in your development there. So I think from my perspective, another player, bin him.
And the other end of the scale is mate Mkhitaryan, decorated, experienced, doesn't show up.
Bin.
Doesn't show up.
Bin, you know. Bin.
How big's your bin?
It's a big bin.
As big as your bins out there, those industrial garden bins.
Those are quite big. You can probably get a couple of Alex Iwobis in there.
Definitely.
As a final note on the kit man, I obviously, you know, every week before we come in here for the show, I just pop in for 10 minutes with Patrick Christie's and Richard Lee for Love Sport Drive. We have a chat. I let them know what's coming up on the show. And I broke down this story for them. I said the kit man has been giving the speeches. And Richard Lee, who is, you know, he's a former Premier League goalkeeper and he's an inspirational bloke as well. He dead serious went, well, yeah, but what if he's a really good motivational speaker? Is that a possibility?
Why is he a kit man then? It's a wrong job.
Why is he not on the circuit, on the conference circuit? Yeah.
But is it possible that Emery has actually identified a master motivator in the background of the club?
Worked a treat, didn't it?
Well, yeah.
Worked a treat.
Well, A, it didn't work, but B, I'm pretty sure part of the story as well says that he's been rotating it. So not only does he rotate our team, but yeah, he
There's
rotates the motivational speakers as well. So maybe that's one of the criteria when you hand your CV in at London Coleman.
Maybe you're the call up. You'll get the call up next week. You can turn up with a list of words. Yeah. Bin. Don't go anywhere.
This is Love Sport.
You're listening to the Arsenal Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and Giles Aniam and Chris Howard of Gunnerstown. And I'm delighted to say that we're also joined on the line by James Benge, who's a senior reporter at football.london. Evening, James. Thanks very much for joining us. The most word used in the studio so far this evening is bin. All craven. They're currently vying. All cowards, because as you may be able to tell, the atmosphere is not all that cheery. Are you similarly frustrated?
Because I kind of thought that the period of having to write off every Arsenal season and the final few weeks and of them just kind of folding under any pressure had kind of ended under Unai Emery, and that kind of with a new manager it might be a new story, but it really does feel like the same old Arsenal. You know, Clay keeps handing them these lifelines and they keep, I guess, throwing them in the bin. So there's another use of the word bin.
James Giles here. What do you think Emery's tactics were, you know, yesterday? What do you think he was trying to implement with that use of tactics at the start of the game yesterday?
I have absolutely no idea, honestly. Normally you can see some sort of semblance of a plan, and it was definitely a reaction to the Wolves game where Arsenal kind of had loads of possession and just left themselves way open on the break. And obviously, you can't really do that against Jamie Vardy. So there was a kind of, I guess, a view to the idea that Xhaka and Torreira will sit deep and shield a back four, even though, which has Mustafi in it, even though Emery basically doesn't think he can play in a back four. But then I didn't really understand what Mkhitaryan and Iwobi were supposed to do, and they didn't really do much anyway. And there seemed to be an awful lot of long balls up to Aubameyang, which is hardly the best idea when he's up against someone like Maguire. He talked in his post-match press conference about, you know, wanting to have a lot of possession, and I don't think Arsenal have ever had as little possession in a game since stats have been around in the Premier League era. So I don't know what the plan was. There was no sign of it on the pitch. It was a mess from start to finish. Up there was the worst.
in such a short era too as well. James, how's Chris here? Last season, we were all talking about how the players had essentially given up on Wenger just before he announced that he was leaving. And they're putting in similar performances. Do you think the players are losing faith with Emery?
I don't really. I know he is very popular and the players do respect a lot of what he's achieved. But, I mean, I just think they're losing faith in themselves, really. I think that there's a lot of... You know, I spoke to Granit Xhaka after this game and he just looked drained and exhausted and, you know, he was asked about the confidence in the dressing room and, you know, there was a sort of grim laugh before he spoke. So I really feel says it all, and I think there's still an issue within this group in terms of how they respond to adversity. Like, I know it might be a bit of an old-fashioned view, but personally I put a lot of that on the captain and the leadership around this group. I think people like Petr Cech and Lauren Koscielny are excellent ambassadors for the club, but they're not really going to G the troops and inspire better performances from their teammates by through their words. And sometimes you just look around that group of players and you think, right, well, who's setting expectations? Who's setting demands? I don't really think there is anyone. And I think that's why when things go wrong, they start to go really wrong really quickly.
James, looking at the squad and the options available, I saw on the bench, you had four under 20, 21 or unders and three ageing players. That tells me, I mean, there's no one in that bracket of established kind of players that can step in and do a job. You know, I think there's a massive chasm between his first 11 or most of his first 11 and players in the squad that can come in and do a job. You can even argue that the guys in the first 11 aren't up to standard themselves. What do you see him plugging that gap, that talent gap, or in the summer? And how do you think? Do you think the club will back him in the summer to plug that talent gap and sort of like improve the status, the talent level within the squad?
I think they'd like to, and you know, as I've reported before, the money's not really going to be there. If, as looks likely, they miss out on the Champions League, there's less than £50 million in the transfer budget. You can try and sell a lot of these players, but I'm going to need a lot of convincing that there's going to be a ton of teams lining up outside the door to take someone like Mustafi or Mkhitaryan even off your hands. I think that they would like to. I think the truth is we're really looking at that summer when the Ozil contract expires, when the Mkhitaryan contract expires. That's the summer of 2021. That is when I would expect to see a real change, and that might be under a different manager. But look, Arsenal have, in that January, they absolutely obliterated their wage budget to keep players that require very specific set of circumstances to impress. I think the really important thing that you point out there is they have a squad that is largely made up of players that are over 30 or under 24. You know, sort of, you've got, in terms of players that you might say are theoretically in what should be their prime years, you have someone like Mustafi, Ramsey, Lacazette, Leno. That's about it, really. There's some really good kids coming through, both, you know, the likes of Guendouzi and Holding, the regulars in the team, and the players at under 23 level. But there are a lot of people in their 30s that are on a lot of money, and some like Aubameyang are playing well, but a lot of them aren't really. So I think this could be the start of a rough few years where I just think if Arsenal can just keep competitive and just keep themselves in the top six, that might actually be an achievement.
James, if Arsenal are left with this current crop of players in the summer, as of course they will be, and Unai Emery is only given £50 million, as it sounds like he will be, is it going to be fair to judge his performance in any way, shape or form? Because he's had one window, he's brought in a few of his own players, but this squad needs wholesale surgery doing to it. And if he's not got the money to do it, are we even going to know what kind of job he's doing?
No, but I guess that's just how it works. It's going to work at Arsenal. And I mean, I guess the thing we forget here is, if he wins the Europa League, everything's fine. Everything's great. You're in the Champions League, a bit more money to spend, and there's less pressure on everything. But I think this could be such a tough job for him. And it could be a really tough job for any manager. And so we might end up you know, maybe in a year's time, if there's no progress, Arsenal kind of, I'm not, no one's quite sure how exactly the option will work in his contract, if there is one. I couldn't say with 100% certainty, but it might be that in a year's time, we're looking at sort of Emery moving on because he's not quite been able to do the job. But it's such a tough job, I'm not sure who could.
One more thing for me, James. What do you think the response is going to be on Thursday? I mean, obviously Napoli, we took care of them. Do you think the players are going to be? Do you think that the players will be looking at this as their one last chance to get into the top four? I mean, I know you spoke to Xhaka, and I think he said that they're not thinking about the top four. Do you think they're now focusing more or less on the Europa League as their one route to get back into the Champions League?
I think much more. In effect, you can't really control what happens in terms of the top four. You need another team to do you a favour against Chelsea. So I think you do really have to work off the assumption that the Europa League is your only way into the top four. And look, I'm not a regular watcher of Valencia, but it sounds like they did quite dreadfully at the weekend as well. So I think Arsenal are quite confident, or should be quite confident, they can get through that semi-final. And then, you know, London Derby in the final with, you know, all the pressure that Chelsea can ruin Arsenal's Champions League hopes and beat them to a trophy. That sounds very stressful indeed. But, yeah, it's absolutely, the focus now is really on the Europa League. I think there'll be quite a good response. I think they'll play well. I think the Emirates might kind of for once be really up for a game. And then I think probably they're going to make the final. So, that, you know, suddenly, as I said, it could all then change on one game. That one game will define whether or not Emery's first season has been a success or a failure. Mm. I guess no pressure then.
No pressure then, indeed. James, you're spot on. Lovely to speak to you as ever. Thank you for joining us. James Benge there, who is the senior reporter at football.london. One thing James mentioned there was that he's pretty confident that Arsenal will get past Valencia, not just because of their indifferent form of their own, of course, but also because Arsenal's form in Europe has seemed to have defied the league form. Of course, shambolic in the Premier League, but very, very impressive, very tight at the back against Napoli across two legs. That sort of ties in with the away form, doesn't it? Because Arsenal's away form didn't seem to apply in Naples. Neither did the league form. If they can do it on a cold, windy night in Naples, why can't they do it at Leicester?
The only thing I'd say with that, though, is that Napoli had chances in both games and they really spurned quite a few very good chances, and maybe we rode our luck a little bit at times, but we still did the business. You know, you can't really complain not conceding over two legs against such a good team. I think we caught them on a good day, and the narrative of the second leg changed because we didn't concede in the first leg. So I think that had a bit of an impact, and that's how important it's going to be on Thursday night. And it will be interesting because I think they're missing people like Kondogbia. Right. I think he's injured at the moment, and he's a big player. I don't know. I don't watch enough Spanish football to know about Valencia, but
he certainly comes into his own. I mean, the Europa League is his competition.
Yeah, he's got this incredible pedigree.
Yeah, you know, and for one reason or another, he just seems to
be comfortable.
Yeah, and you know, and it conveys it to the players, and somehow they carry out what he wants them to do. Obviously, without a few, you know, there's always a few frights along the way. You look at Rennes in the first leg.
Barthez,
you know. But, you know, we've kind of got through it, and he seems to know what he's doing. He's comfortable in that Europa League jacket. So, I'm hoping that we see a response on Thursday and go out. You know, we leave Emirates with a healthy lead. I really think we have to.
Because
we've
got
confidence.
We've got a terrible record against Spanish teams, I think. I think the Real Madrid away game all those years ago where Henry scored, I think that's the only time in my head I can remember that we've beaten Spanish teams.
No, we have to exercise the ghost of John Carew.
Yeah, I remember that. Rolling back the years,
That was Valencia, the last time we played them, was the ghost of John Carew. So, you know, we owe them.
I think my single favourite thing that John Carew has contributed to football is actually a quote from Zlatan Ibrahimovic after they had a falling out, and Ibra was asked what he thought of it, and he said, yeah, well, whatever, because what John Carew can do with a football, I can do with an orange. Always modest.
Love it.
Would you have, and I'm not being wholly serious here, but it's an interesting question, when we talk about the need for leaders, for passion, for resilience, would you have a geriatric Zlatan Ibrahimovic, an ageing, bring Carl's Poyol out of retirement, would you have someone who's not quite good enough in that Lichtsteiner mould if it meant that even if you didn't play them, you'd just sort out that dressing room?
But we sort of did have that with Mertesacker.
We've got no Socrates. Yeah. He's, you know, he's a vocal.
He's a fiery, rah, rah, rah. You know,
I think it comes down to more than that. I think we need a bit. We need that, but we need a bit more.
It's a mental thing that has seeped through the entire team. This isn't a let's just channel some sort of Tony Adams-esque player to come in. We could get that one player, but unless the mentality of the entire squad changes, one player isn't going to make a lot of difference.
Yep, and to change the mentality of the entire squad, you're going to have to change large parts of that squad, of course, with lots of players going out the door. So there's just one word for that, really.
This is Love Sport.
Bin. You are, of course, listening to the Arsenal Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and Giles Aniam and Chris Howard of Gunnerstown. And if this week hadn't already been harrowing enough for Arsenal fans, they were greeted with the glorious, actually comical news that a certain Mr. Suarez is out for the season.
What is a Denis Suarez?
It's Kim Kallstrom, isn't it?
The ghost of Kim Kallstrom returned to haunt us.
How much football did he play in the first team?
67 minutes.
Across how many games?
Kallstrom or Suarez?
Suarez.
Suarez played 67 minutes, I think, across about four games, was it?
I bet it wasn't even
all substitute appearances. He didn't even start in a single game, did he?
No.
So I think when they went to Dubai, I don't even think he started.
Really?
Yeah, I think he came on as a half-time sub.
So the first question, before we get into quite how farcical this injury is how farcical the signing was in the first place. Because when Arsenal were linked, it did seem to make sense. There was the Spanish connection for Emery. He's a highly rated player. Arsenal had been linked in the past. It was looking like a potential permanent deal wouldn't be too complicated in the summer. But why do we want him so much if he wasn't going to play any football?
Emery.
This is my biggest worry. So this time last year, we had the transfer Diamond Eye, Sven Mislintat. And the aim of the club was to start to unearth some of these young gems that that could potentially make a big difference to us and also give us a different model. You know, we can't compete with the Cities, we can't compete with the Liverpools, but if we go out and we buy the Mavropanoses or the Guendouzis and they cost paltry amounts, but they can get into the first team and they can show promise, then, you know, at least we've got a direction. And this is, again, me pointing towards the direction in which the club is going. And I felt like a year ago, it felt like we had that sort of direction. I don't mind if the club says we've got 60 million quid to spend, 70 million quid to spend or whatever it is. But we know exactly what we're going to do. We're going to go for these younger profile players, 21, 22 year olds. We're going to spend 10, 15, 20 million pounds here and there. Trust us, we've already unearthed a few. But because Sven has now gone, and we had the stories of Raul Senyehi and his contacts getting his little black book out. The first example of his little black book is to buy a squad player who wasn't fully fit from Barcelona because Emery knew him. And that's my biggest worry, is that we get into the summer and we're going to end up with the Nzonzis of this world just because Emery knows them.
Would you not have Nzonzi?
30 years old, you know, he'd probably... How much is he going to cost? 20 million quid? Yeah, it's just...
It's not progressive. It's not forward-thinking, is it? It's not a forward-thinking transfer. I don't know what they were thinking with Denis Suarez. He'd had half a season a few seasons ago. You know that he kind of showed some promise, and that was it. Barcelona were trying to fit us up.
They were trying to fit us up. They wanted like 20-odd million quid or something.
They were guarantees, didn't they? A compulsory.
Can you imagine?
Riot, you know.
Can you imagine if we'd have already got that?
Oh,
if we'd have been forced into that signing? I mean. he may yet turn out to be a good player somewhere else. I'm just, it's not at Arsenal.
Yeah.
And what we did see of him, I didn't really see a player that I thought, wow, and there's something in here.
And the thing is, you say to people, you know, the club really didn't back the team with any investment. People say, oh, you know, you've got to understand the story. There's a story behind that. You know, we're not looking to make any deals in January. It's all about the summer. I was thinking, well, Tielemans. You know, this one got Tielemans. We could have...
On loan.
You know, he seems all right, you know. So there were the odd deals out there, deals that could have been made.
This is where the things like the Perisic doesn't make any sense. Yeah. Perisic is an expensive, even loan signing, it would have been an expensive signing.
And he's geriatric, yeah.
He's 30 odd, he's had a terrible season.
So there's no structure, there's no strategy. It's this time last year, even Gazidis, he probably knew he was on his way out, and so he thought, oh, I want some PR signings here. So he went out and bought Aubameyang. You know, don't get me wrong, he's been brilliant, so excellent. But he also went out and bought Mkhitaryan, and Mkhitaryan has been woeful as a signing. And on $200,000 a week, I mean, we're essentially chucking money away.
The joke is, he's been better and cheaper than the man who moved in the opposite direction.
But you know what? Yeah. You know, but the man who moved in the opposite direction, we haven't replaced him.
Mm.
Those goals, that energy... That single-mindedness to try and win a game.
Yeah.
We have not replaced
that. Which is
that.
Nowhere on the pitch.
Yeah, you know. I know that people said that towards the end of his career at Arsenal, he became marginalised and sulky and petulant and whatnot. But I tell you what, that 16-17 season when Wenger put him up front because Giroud couldn't do it the season before.
That hat-trick against West Ham. Oh.
That was just one example of how many times he took a game by the scruff of its neck and won us the game. And Wenger, apparently he was co-commentating for the Arsenal-Leicester game on Sunday. And he said, what's the biggest difference between Alexis Sanchez at Arsenal and Alexis Sanchez at Man United? He said, well, Mesut Ozil was the biggest difference. And I think Mesut Ozil has missed Alexis Sanchez as much as Alexis Sanchez misses him. You know, that combination, that connection that they had was magical.
At this rate, they could be reunited in China.
Yeah, you never know. But, you know, that's the kind of player that I want to see. Maverick, enigma. I don't care if he's not best pals with him, if he doesn't add to their social media trail or whatever it is they do on Instagram or Snapchat. I just want somebody that goes out there and can win a game out of nothing. Hazard does it. They've got so many players at Man City that do it. You've got the front three at Liverpool that do it. We need somebody of that ilk at our club.
Two seasons ago, he was bombing along that left-hand side and cutting inside and whipping balls in. Now we've got someone like Alex Iwobi who's coming inside, tripping over his own feet, side-footing it to a goalkeeper or crossing it out of play.
Bin.
Absolute bin.
No, but I think it's a struggle. And the Tielemans point, Giles, that you bring up is a very, very interesting one, where obviously as football fans, we can't expect our club to be the club who makes the gem signing every time. Missing out on Tielemans, fair enough. It's not like United, Barcelona, PSG were queuing up, even though he has been massively rated for years. But as you say, there must be other better options. You could argue that Andre Gomez, whilst not an exceptional player, has actually been better on loan at Everton than Denis Suarez has at Arsenal. At least he's got on the pitch. Arsenal's seriously,
that's
though.
Our criteria.
Seriously, though, our criteria, if you sign a player and he doesn't play any football, then you can sign Ronaldo.
The
frankly.
Reason why I don't really rate... I don't think Gomez would have been good at Arsenal because he's a quite a slow player. To me, he kind of gets the ball, kind of keeps it. He's not punchy with it. Tielemans, I was watching him on Sunday. His movement, off the ball movement, brilliant. Drifts into areas that drifts behind the centre half, drifts in between the lines, gets the ball, touches it on. He sees what, before he's gotten the ball, he knows what he's going to do with it.
Scores goals as
scores
well.
Goals scores as
all
well.
Kinds
has,
of you know,
has he got an option to buy? Leicester got the option
yeah,
to buy
option,
it.
And yeah, because so apparently there was a swap. I think Adrian Silva went to Monaco, and he's gone there on loan. I think it's not. I don't think it's compulsory. And I know that he's in the shop window, and it's not only going to be there'll be other clubs that'll be up for him.
What it'll come down to is whether Leicester's option is exclusive or whether they get first refusal. Yeah. And I don't think they do.
No.
And we've already seen, I mean, obviously transfer rumours, as you were saying, Chris, transfer rumours are transfer rumours. They're very hard to know if they're real or not. But I've seen him heavily linked to Arsenal, heavily linked to Spurs, heavily linked to PSG, heavily linked to United.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Leicester aren't getting him.
Exactly.
which is quite hard on them, really. And you saw him, the one moment, by the way, where I thought he might have a chance of staying there was when he scored and immediately hugged Maddison and they had a special sort of secret handshake. And I thought, hang on a minute, that isn't actually the behaviour of a loan signing who's just there to put himself in the shop window. A lot of these Arsenal players need to be getting in the shop window because Chris Howard is going to be coming into the club in a managerial capacity and instigating an absolute fire sale. But he will forgive you if you win the Europa League. And coming up next, we'll be asking Europa League or bust.
This is Love Sport.
It's the Arsenal Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with Johnny Burrow, Giles Aniam and Chris Howard of Gunnerstown. And the one bit of light at the end of the tunnel for Arsenal fans as things stand is, of course, the upcoming Europa League semi-final against Valencia and the possibility of a final and even winners medals after that, which would, of course, bring with them Champions League qualification. Now, that's not looking all that likely via the league route, getting in the top four. Do you feel now that that's gone and it's a case of Europa League or no Champions
League? Well, we need snookers in the league. That's just the bottom line. You know, we need snookers. We need help from others. But as James said, maybe the players are thinking more about the Europa League now, you know, and their chances in it. And, you know, as we've discussed earlier, we're looking quite good. Valencia, they've got a couple of good. I know Gonçalo Guedes was somebody that we looked at or we were interested in last
season. Everyone looked at him, I think.
You know, he had a stellar season on loan at them last season. I think he signed for them permanently. You know, they've got a few good players. Rodrigo or someone quite decent over there. But I think we're capable of doing it. And I think we have to start looking at the Europa League. Like I said, we need snookers in the league. I'm not sure how many we're going to get. The stars are going to have to align for us to sneak that top four.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at it, we've got Brighton at home, which I'd fancy us to win. Burnley away, not really. But even if we won those two games, that puts us on 72 points. And I think Chelsea are on 68. So Chelsea can afford to draw. And because we've lost 3-0 as well, I think our goal difference is now worse than Chelsea's. You can have a check for me, Giles. But they've got Watford at home. I think Watford will be playing within themselves. They've got a cup final a few weeks later. And then they've got Leicester away. Maybe they get a Leicester team that can be bothered, but last game of the season, they probably won't have anything to play for. They'll be on the beach. They'll be a little bit more impetus from Chelsea's perspective. I think Chelsea have probably got that sewn up now. So therefore, yeah, it is the Europa League or bust. And I just fear that we're going to get Chelsea in the final.
I don't know. I think if
we can beat Valencia.
Yeah, I mean, let's not look too far ahead. I think Eintracht Frankfurt have upset the odds all along this season, and I think they might do it again against Chelsea.
They've got some quality players.
Those
as well.
Front four, those the Kostic, Rebic, Jovic, who might be going to Real Madrid, and Haller. Very good combination up there, up front. You know, they'll cause Chelsea some problems, but we've got to think about Valencia. It's looking more and more likely that that's going to be our route. And the thing is, you know what? This squad is not ready for Champions League. Even if we get Champions League qualification,
well, half of them in the bin. Yeah. So we need about 16 players.
Right?
I can't remember how much you get for qualifying for the Champions
League. It's about 65, around 65.
Well, that's going to get you a couple of decent.
I still think we
need
to do some trading, some wheeling and dealing in and out.
Get Redknapp in.
Yeah.
If you think about we'll do some logistics. Let's just say we've got 40 million quid. Even if we get into the Champions League, that's 65. Mm. If you can offload a few players at, 30? Should we say another 40 million quid? You're talking about £145 million.
Max.
Yeah, at best. If you're going to go out and buy first teamers, you're probably talking about between 30 to 50 million. Mm. Let's just say it's 50. Let's just say we buy 550 million players. That's 150 million. That's
550 million.
530 million players, right. Sorry. So, but that's not even £30 million. Isn't even your top drawer.
That's your Granit Xhaka.
That is like Lucas Torreira. Lucas Torreira cost us £25 million, and that was a bit of a gamble. We knew that he had a release clause. We got in there early. You've got to do that five times.
Got to be really.
You've got to be not just savvy. You've got to be like unbelievably savvy.
But
I can't see it.
You should be unbelievably savvy, shouldn't you? I mean, Arsenal are a top club with this reputation of unearthing gems. Why can't they do it?
Everybody's in the same market, though, aren't they? That's the thing. There was a time with Arsene Wenger's time where he knew the West Africa and French market. He was the only one that knew that market. You know, everyone's playing the same field.
I think Arsenal play it slightly differently. I think if you look at the kind of player who Man City have been looking to sign in the last few years, the kind of player who Chelsea are looking to sign, United in a relatively similar way, they're signing the big, obvious players. Mm. Liverpool are a possible exception, but even the likes of Naby Keita were rated. I think the Torreira signing, the Xhaka signing, a very good example of Arsenal trying to get a bit clever with it. And if they do bring in a new director of football who does know what he's doing or she's doing on a really serious level, then surely there could be a few gems out there.
Yeah, that's the thing. You have to get a technical director or promote, is it Kajigao or whatever his name is, you know. But we, at the moment, we don't.
And we've done nothing.
Yeah.
Like, we went all out for Monchi, and he said, cheerio, lads, and the thing is, I'll go back to Seville.
And the thing is,
this is farcical.
And the thing is, it's now the time that technical directors and head of, they're making, you know, they're talking to players.
And we're sitting almost, on our hands.
Yeah, they're almost finalising deals. And they're waiting for the end of the season to announce them. And at the moment, from what we know, nothing's happening or very little's happening. You know, so it puts us really on the back foot. You know, get the Champions League. We're behind the eight ball in terms of finding, recruiting players that we want. Those players will be getting drummed up by other clubs, either here or elsewhere in the continent. Teams like Dortmund, they don't have much money, but they're very savvy with their recruitment. Those kind of teams will be looking at the same kind of players that we're looking at, you know, as well as people from these shores. So, you know, we're behind the eight ball as it is, and I'm not super confident that we're going to get many players that Emery needs to improve this squad, whether it's in the Champions League or Europa League next season.
And my worry is that, and the Suarez situation is a case in point, my worry is that Emery's just going to say, I like this player and I like that player and I want this player and I want that player. Well, actually, at the beginning of the season...
all of those players are in Zonzi.
Yeah, all of them. but the problem is that the way that... when he came into the club, he came into a structure where he was told, you're not having anything to do with that. Mm. You tell us a style, we'll agree collectively the style.
Do you think he's a soft touch? Seriously. I mean, we've talked about cowardice of the players. We've talked about him not being willing to clear them out. Do you think in every part of his managerial style, Emery is a man who is willing to just take the flak, take the back seat and be a pushover?
I don't know. He does seem to want to impress a lot. He wants to placate.
Just wants to be loved, Giles.
Yeah, you know, he came and he said, I don't mind what squad I've got. I work with what I've got. I think he's kind of opened his eyes, actually, that this squad is not good enough.
No.
You know, and come the summer, he's going to have to go to the board and say, look, you need to back me. If you want us to get into that Champions League or, you know, return to that kind of level, we're going to need to make some serious investment. I don't know if we're going to do that. This self-sustaining model, I don't think is working right now.
Well, talking of that investment, even our tentative estimated figure of 145, 50 million quid,
if we get into Champions League,
relies on Champions League qualification. We've established that realistically, the only way the club are going to do that is by winning the Europa League. But as you mentioned, Giles, earlier in the show, Unai Emery has a pedigree in that competition that beats any manager in world football. I think in the history of world football, he has an incredible knowledge of what it takes to win. Now, when he was brought in as Arsenal boss, Arsenal already knew that they would be playing in that competition for at least 1 year, quite possibly a few years. Do you think that was a significant factor in his appointment?
Could well have been. You know, could well have been, you know, apparently the Sanlehi and Vinay said that Champions League qualification is a must this season. So bringing in Emery, who's got, as you say, unrivaled knowledge pedigree,
gives you that backup plan.
Yeah, you know. So maybe I wouldn't be surprised. I don't think that's too far from the truth. That's probably one of the factors that got him the job.
Yeah, most likely. I don't know. I feel like it's a lot to put your faith in and put your reliance in cup competitions is dangerous, and we've had it in front of us. We've basically within a week had a nice easy, you know, what keeps going on in my head is, even if we'd have completely have stumbled as we have done away Leicester and Wolves, we only need to beat Palace and then we only need to beat Brighton, and then you take it down to the final game and it's still in our hands and we've fudged it. And that's the thing that I keep, even yesterday after the game, I just kept looking back at that Palace game and saying, That was when you absolutely
had
and it
to
was,
do it.
And that was Emery, I think, because and that was Emery thinking like a mainland European manager, thinking this is the sort of game I can probably rotate quite comfortably. Mm. You know, that sort of stuff happens in
Spain.
In Spain.
In France.
You know, you play the Getafes or whatever it is on a Saturday or on a Sunday and you pick up your win and then you go and play in Europe having rested a few players. That doesn't happen in the Premier League.
I think he took our home form for granted and took Palace. Apparently, Palace didn't even play their top squad either. You know, so he probably took them for granted as well. But yeah, it's come a cropper. It's come back to haunt us.
It's a difficult time to be an Arsenal fan. And whatever Unai Emery says, it's a point at which the players have to take some responsibility. And some of them, to be honest, have to go. Coming up, we're going to be discussing how much deadwood needs cutting. And there's only one answer. Chris.
This is Love Sport.
Open the bin. It's the Arsenal Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow and Giles Aniam and Chris Howard of Gunnerstown. And this is a show where we love to hear from you. As ever, you're welcome to ring in 0208 7020 558 or you can tweet in at Love Sport Radio or at GT Radio Pod. And that Twitter account has been put to good use this week by our own Chris Howard because he ran a poll. And it's kicking off. The poll asks a very simple question. How many of Arsenal's current first team squad would you let go in the summer? You've got three options. 1 to 5, 6 to 10, or Chris's preferred choice, all of them. All of them comes in distant third, you'll be pleased to hear, with 8%, presumably because a few of us like Aubameyang.
Yeah.
1 to 5 is in next with 29%. And 6 to 10, which is a massive overhaul, romps to the lead with 63% of 641 votes. So not a negligible sample size there. People want serious, serious change at this football club.
Yeah, it's interesting as well, because if you start to then look at the individuals that are definitely going to go anyway. So I think Jenkinson is probably definitely going to go. I think he's got another year in his contract, doesn't he, Giles?
I don't know.
The never-ending contract. Let's just say you're going to get a maximum of, a couple of million quid for him.
Mm.
Max. You've got Lischteiner, you're going to get nothing for him. You've got Ramsey, we're going to get nothing for him. You've got Cech, we're going to get nothing for him. We've got Welbeck. You're going to get nothing for him because his contract's running out unless you offer him a new contract.
Mm.
So we're talking about getting £40 million from transfers and you're probably looking at if Chambers comes back in, it's probably not a popular choice for some people. Some people have said, well, actually, he's done well at Fulham.
He's done very well at Fulham.
But if you're talking about making some money, then I feel like there's only two players that, I mean, I would bin quite a few players, as we've already discussed tonight, but Mustafi is something that a lot of people have talked about. What are you going to get for him? Like 20 million quid?
Yeah, we'd take a loss on him, wouldn't we?
And then if you talk about Chambers, you might get another 20 million quid.
Yeah, I think you'd get 20 for the Englishness.
Yeah.
You know what? I don't really want to think about it, but if we don't get Champions League, I think one of the front two would have to be sold. Simply because they've got some value, whether it's Aubameyang or Lacazette, they'll probably be easier to sell than someone like Ozil and Mkhitaryan because they'll be sought after. And yeah, you're probably looking at the best part of 40. You get your money back on them.
I think if you look at Mickey and Ozil, the only way that they get pushed out the door is if that's on a free transfer. And probably with Ozil, certainly, we end up paying some of their wages a period of time. So actually, then it's a negative. It's even more of a negative.
Yeah.
So
I don't know how easy it would be to get rid of Ozil. I think he should go simply because the football we're playing is moving away from his kind of football. I think Emery's made it quite clear that, you know, he doesn't fit into his style or what he sees as his brand of football. So we've got two divergent cultures here. One of them has to go. Yeah. I think Ozil on that point alone has to go. But how we get rid of him, I don't know.
Right. Simple game. I'm going to throw some names at you. Bin or no bin. Mm. So, Alex Iwobi.
Bin.
Binny McBinface.
Binny McBinface. Henrik Mkhitaryan.
Same.
Bin Master.
Bin Master. Mesut Ozil.
Bin.
Dr. Bin Love.
Dr. Bin Love. Granit Xhaka.
I wouldn't be against it, but you'd have to buy somebody that's equally as good or upgrade on that.
I feel like I'm going to have to say keep, mainly because there are so many other players that we have to bin. We're going to...
the bin's full.
You can't, we'll end up with literally nobody. I've just, like I said, I'm sorry to actually go through your list and then...
No, I mean, the list is endless. I was going to go Ainsley Maitland-Niles.
Keep. No, keep that one.
Keep Kolasinac.
Keep.
If we buy a
actually,
left back,
he can't.
Bring,
he can't play at left at fullback. Yeah, he can play at wing back.
Bring
but
in
you can't have specialist players, can you? You can't have specialist players like who can just play wing back.
Yeah,
you need versatile players.
Tagliafico, his value's going up by the day, but I mean, if we can get it for 25, I'd sell Kolasinac for the same.
Monreal.
Go.
Ben.
Binster.
Binster's pasty. I'm going to stop asking because I think the bin is full, mm-hmm. frankly.
I mean, I've just looked at it and we said on the poll, we said most people said 6 to 10. You can reel off Lichtstein and Mustafi, Jenkinson, Ramsey, Cech, Welbeck, Chambers, and of one or Mickey or Ozil. And that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. That's 8 players straight away. So it doesn't seem unfeasible for it to be that much of a turnover. And normally, when you're talking about first team squads, you normally lose 2 or 3 if you're a relatively stable team, maybe 1 or 2, and then you add to it.
I just don't think it's going to happen.
I don't think it will as well. I think we're going to end up being stuck with most of these players. Mm. I think we're going to end up, because we'll lose Lichtsteiner, we'll lose Ramsey, we'll lose Cech. I think we'll lose In fact, more and more I think about it, we might not even lose Welbeck, purely because we don't have the money to do anything else, so we have to give him a couple of years' contract. I think they'll try and offload one of Mkhitaryan and Ozil, but I think they won't be able to do it, so then we're stuck with them. Chambers is the one that I think, all right, we generate some money, but you know, you've then got a 20 million, 30 million, 40 million quid that you've got to buy an upgrade.
Do you think that they would take
Elneny, another one.
Do you think they'll take offers on one of their I think they might take an offer. If they got a good offer for Xhaka, they'd consider it. I think if they got a good offer for one of the front two, they'd consider it.
Yeah.
Charlie said last week they got a good offer for Guendouzi, they'd consider it. You know, so I think, if somebody comes in with a good offer, and us being in the state that we are in, fiscally, then it will be very much considered, and it might be too hard to turn down because we've got nowhere else to turn. Yeah.
Have you thought beyond Tagliafico? Are there any specific names that you'd really like to see?
I just want to see a type. I don't really have a name. I don't really go for names. I just have a type of player that I like to see come in. You know, that can fit into the kind of profile that he wants to play. You know. But
the protagonistic football, you mean?
Yeah, I mean, the people talk about Tierney, people talk about, obviously, Tagliafico, they talk about the guys at Norwich, Grimaldo, who I don't think is a very good defensive left-back, but very offensive. Albert Moreno, who are probably...
Please,
but you
no.
know what? Because he's a free transfer, he might well be the likeliest one to come in.
But look at what happened last time we signed a full-back on a free.
Yeah, it worked really well for us, didn't it?
Yeah, well, he's going to be in his mid-20s or whatever, so I wouldn't be surprised. I really wouldn't be surprised.
It is a concerning time to be an Arsenal fan. I've said that so many times this evening. It's concerning on the pitch, concerning off the pitch. We've got to hope for a good transfer window. And as we've established, a lot of that depends on the Champions League. The Champions League depends on the Europa League, and the Europa League depends on Valencia. Coming up, we'll be talking to Nikolai Lisberg, who's a Spanish football expert, to find out how good Arsenal's chances are.
This is Love Sport.
You're listening to the Arsenal Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and Giles Aniam and Chris Howard of Gunnerstown. I'm delighted to say we're also joined on the line by Nikolai Lisberg, who's a Spanish football expert. Good evening, Nikolai. Thanks ever so much for joining us. Arsenal's domestic form is woeful. They're now, of course, turning their attentions to the Europa League with hope that they can get beyond Valencia. Should they be feeling confident?
They should be feeling confident because, yeah, Arsenal's domestic form might be woeful, but you could say the same about Valencia. Lost two matches in a row now, and just like Arsenal, really struggling for a top four finish. So I think it's two teams who will be an interesting match because it's two teams who need this win, not just to win the Europa League, but to use the Europa League to qualify for the Champions League next season.
Nikola, hi, it's Chris here. Am I right in thinking that Kondogbia will be missing for the game on Thursday?
Yeah, he's out injured, so most likely it would be a well-known name, Coughlan, who will be starting for Valencia. He played the match against Eibar, where they lost 1-0 this weekend. So he's expected to be out.
And how big a loss is that?
I think it's a big loss because he brings something extra to that midfield. You have to understand that Marcelino, the coach, plays like a 4-4-2, and the two central midfielders are extremely important to his formation. You have the captain, Dani Parejo, like doing the attacking part of that game, and Kondogbia usually being the man in charge of the defensive part. He hasn't been so brilliant this season, but I still think it's a big loss for Valencia not having him on the first day.
Hi, Nicolai. I'm just looking at the league table. Valencia struggling to get back into the Champions League spot. So this is as big a time for us for Valencia as it is for Arsenal. Their season. How would you sum their season up so far?
Oh, it's been very chaotic, I think is the word. I mean, they started off like with not being able to win a game. I think they're on 16 draws or something like that for the season. And they had a horrible first start to the season. There were rumors about Marcelino being sacked because they weren't performing. They were almost in the relegation zone. Then they somehow turned it around during winter time. They had a great run in the Copa del Rey, where they also in the Spanish Cup, where they also in the final. And it's like a season that could be very memorable for them. I mean, they're in the final of the Copa del Rey. They're in the semi-final of the Europa League. They still have a chance of finishing in the top four because the other teams struggling for that place are also losing matches. And I have to remember, this is the year, this is their 100th years anniversary year since they were founded. So this could be potentially a massive season for Valencia. But as it often is in Valencia, everything is a little bit chaotic. You never know where you have Valencia.
Nicolai, who's the key man for Valencia? Who should Arsenal be most worried about? We hear a lot about Gamero and Rodrigo up top. Gonzalo Guedes, of course, is also a well-known name. But Dani Parejo in the middle of the park gets talked about as the man who pulls the strings. If Arsenal want to get through this tie, who should they be looking to neutralise?
Yeah, that's exactly my man I would point to, Dani Parejo, because as you said, they got great quality, they're attacking players, but the story about Valencia this season is that they haven't delivered their strikers. They haven't scored a lot of goals in La Liga, and they haven't been such a threat up front as they used to be. Dani Parejo, as the captain, is extremely important, like I said, in that 4-4-2 formation where he pulls the string on every single move. He's brilliant with the ball. Can you close him down? Can you make sure he can provide the deliveries that he can't set the pace for the game? I think Arsenal have come a massive way to get a good result.
Interesting. What are the Nicolai? What are the Spanish press saying about Arsenal? Are they quite confident given how atrocious that we've been of late, or are they thinking, well, Valencia are just as bad, so this is going to be a tough one?
I'm leaning towards the last one. I read the news when it came out that they were supposed to play Arsenal, and the Spanish press still hold Arsenal as a better team than Valencia is my taking from it as one of the favourites for winning the league. But what they are focusing on us, of course, is as well the meeting with Emery. I mean, he was in Valencia and he knows how to win the Europa League, as we saw with Sevilla several times. And so the Spanish press aren't, I won't say the local press, I won't say they're confident, but they are, I might be nervous, but they're interested in seeing the next few weeks because they got so many important matches ahead and they need to get back to winning days after two defeats in a row in the domestic league.
All right, how do Valencia play? Are they counter-attacking? Do they dominate the ball? Are they, you know, are they sort of like a more direct team? How do they play?
It's a bit of a mix between everything. I won't say that they're particularly good in counter-attacking. It's a very well-organized team who likes to break down their opponents with patience. I mean, when playing against bigger teams, we've seen it a couple of times against Barcelona this season, they tend to do more on counter-attack. But I expect to see a Valencia team also in London who wants to have the ball, not dominate like we sometimes see Spanish teams, but who wants to have the ball, who wants to make a lot of passes and then try to build up an attack. But it's more than anything a very well-organized team who has its focus on defense and the central midfield. The central midfield, as I think I said already a couple of times now, is the cornerstone for this Valencia team. If they can manage to dominate the game, they have a chance, I think.
Nicolo, what's the atmosphere like at the Mestalla? Because we've seen Arsenal's players struggle away from home psychologically. Are they going to be greeted in that away leg by a real bowl of noise that's going to get in their heads, or will they be all right?
I think you can expect a lot of noise. I think you can expect an electric atmosphere at Mestalla. We've seen some of the games this season. The first game of the Champions League against Juventus, I was there, and the atmosphere was absolutely buzzing. You know, they welcomed the team bus when it came to the stadium. And Mestalla, for me, is one of the best football stadiums in Spain, also when it comes to the atmosphere. They need to be up for it. It needs to be a big game. But it doesn't get much more. It doesn't get much bigger than an Europa League semi-final for Valencia. We have to remember, they haven't won a title since 2008, I think it is. So having the return like at Mestalla with the possible chance to get into the Europa League final, I think it will be absolutely buzzing for that match.
And Nicolai, the biggest question of all, who do you see winning across two legs? Of course, it's a difficult one to predict, but if you had to call it, which way do you think it's going to go?
For me, it's 50-50. I wouldn't be surprised if you go into extra time and all the way, maybe into boundaries, but I think if I have to put my money on something, I think Valencia will go through, but I think it's going to be tight and it could go either way. But I think Valencia, maybe being the more organised team than Arsenal, I think that will be the advantage when it's like a cup match, it's a knockout game. I think you have to be sure to get a result. And I don't see them losing 2-0 like Napoli did in Emirates a few weeks ago. I think they were good to get a result in London, and I think they can pull it off at home.
Nicolai, you were so popular in the studio until you backed Valencia, but there are resigned nods. There are resigned nods around me, so you might just be right. Nicolai, lovely to speak to you. Thanks ever so much for your time. Nicolai Lisberg there, who is a Spanish football expert. And Valencia are not the only opponents Arsenal have coming up. There's the small matter of Brighton in the Premier League. Surely it will be 3 points against Brighton. This is the Arsenal Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and Giles Aniam and Chris Howard of Gunnerstown. We've been talking Valencia. We've been talking a lot of Valencia because now, of course, the Europa League is what Arsenal's season rides on. They need that Champions League spot, and that is how it's going to happen. Easy, perhaps, to forget the Premier League for Arsenal fans. Desirable, possibly, given how the Gunners are playing at the moment. But they have got a fixture coming up at the weekend. It is against Brighton and Hove Albion. And I'm delighted to say that we're joined on the line by Sally Friedman, who's a Brighton fan and, of course, a journalist for Football Today. Good evening, Sally. Thanks ever so much for joining us. The biggest question of all is, you're just about clear of that relegation zone. Brighton currently 4 points clear with two games to play. Are you safe?
I wouldn't say 100%. You never know. We have to believe that Cardiff can still do something. I know Cardiff have to win both their games, but anything is possible in football. But we might know by Saturday after Cardiff have played, because they play Crystal Palace. So if Crystal Palace do us a favour, who are ironically our rivals, we could go into the Arsenal game knowing that we're okay. Or if Cardiff do win the game, then we will be playing for safety ourselves. So really depends on that Cardiff result on Saturday.
Hi, Sally. It's Chris here. Where are your goals going to come from?
Very good question. We scored our first after, I think, 7 games. At the weekend against Newcastle. It's tough to watch. Glenn Murray and has done well during the season. But we haven't scored for a long, long time. I think that was the longest in Brighton's history that we'd gone without scoring a goal. And even I think the players and fans forgot what to do when we did finally score against Newcastle.
Sorry to cut over you. To be fair, you know, we've got Mustafi, we've got Sobradis, we've got an aging Koscielny. We'll give you a chance or two. You can bet your bottom dollar.
I hope so. Well, it'd be nice if we actually played some attacking football. I don't think we haven't had many touches in the attacking Park in the last four or five games. We defend very, very deep, which is scary even when we're the home team. So I hope that we actually do attack because we won't score from our own half. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I think it will really depend, as I say, on the score the day before as to how we approach the game. If we know we're safe, the players can go in a bit more freely and definitely attack a little bit more than what we've been doing.
Hi, so yeah, it's Giles here. So, how's Chris Hughton been viewed? I mean, for me, he's gone quite a lot with, not a lot, you know, in recent seasons to get him up into Premier League and keep him there last season. This season seems to be a really hard slog. What is the fans, the Seagulls' view of Chris Hughton?
Yeah, good question. There are a lot in the last few weeks with all the defensive tactics that he's quite renowned for, calling for him to go at the end of the season. And there's the other camp that say, look at what he's achieved with a squad that's, you know, bottom half of the Premier League and stayed up in our first season and did so well, beat Man U last season to secure our safety at home. And then, yeah, this season we started well, but it's been a struggle the last second half of the season. And a lot of fans are saying that maybe he's, you know, he's done all he can. But when you look at our squad, it's pretty hard. You've got to say that some responsibility is on the players, some is on the coach. But I'm kind of 50-50 at the moment as to whether I think he should go at the end of the season. I think he's a great manager and he's done really well. But we... It was, and definitely at Newcastle, our last game, for the first 45 minutes, that's the worst I've seen us play in the Premier League. It was awful. But then, whatever he said at half-time, and the changes he made, you've got to give him credit, because they came out of second half completely different team, and maybe got us the vital point that's going to see us safe. So, yeah, there's certainly some fans that think, say, see ya, and there's other fans that are saying, no, look at what he's achieved, he's done really well.
Would you have him stay, Sally? I mean, for my money, I think any Brighton fan who wants to kick him out is mad, aren't they?
Or you have to see what are the alternatives. I mean, who else could come in with a, and, you know that it's what Brighton wants
Allardyce.
To achieve, I guess.
Arsene Wenger.
Allardyce, Wenger. Yeah, he's not on the job at the moment. Yeah, some names there, but it's again, you know, a long-term strategy. Are we going to, you know, what's our goal for next season, to finish mid-table, or in 10 years do we want to be pushing for, you know, change the style of player that we're playing? And
in 10 years you could be battling Arsenal for sixth. Just think of that. Could be exciting times. Exciting times indeed.
But yeah, I'm as I said, I don't have a clear-cut answer on that one. I'm a bit like a politician, 50-50. Let's see, if he keeps us safe, then I'll be edging on that. Let maybe give him a couple more seasons and get some. We definitely, I mean, every team down the bottom of the Premier League will say the same, but we need some pace up front. We need some midfielders. Our defence is solid. I'd say that that's what's kept us where we are, just about, although we did leak quite a few goals in the last half of the season. But, yeah, we definitely need to get some pace in the team.
Sally, talking of pace and that need for it up front, what's happened to Jose Izquierdo? Because he got his first start in 4.5 months against Wolves the other day. Last season, he looked really bright. He scored some lovely goals. He looked like the standout performer for Brighton. And yet we've just not seen him this year.
Well, I didn't even realise he was on the pitch against Newcastle, to be honest. he was. And I think he touched the ball not very often. And people say maybe he's carrying an injury. I don't know why, if he is carrying an injury, why would you play someone that he clearly was completely off his game? And you've got Knockaert and March on the bench, the wingers that were hungry and came on and changed the second half. So I don't know the answer, but he hasn't looked right this season at all. And certainly against Newcastle, I didn't even realise he was playing. So I'm not sure, but hopefully he bounces back from whatever injury he's carrying and has a better season next season.
So, yeah, I mean, we gave Christian Benteke his first goal for about 10 years, so I'm sure he's going to bang one in the weekend. Sorry, Giles, you had a question.
Yeah, sometimes they have rubbish days and then they come out and do something amazing. Knockaert did the same against Crystal Palace, so you just don't know.
One player that kind of catches my eye, you said, sorry, Marsh and Knockaert, but I like Yves Bissouma. Do you think he's destined for greater things, or...?
Yeah, I think he's done really well. I like him as well. He's very creative. For me, the one that shone at the weekend was Bernardo. Very technically. Yeah, and also Bruno. I mean, Bruno's captain, but
he's about 57, isn't he?
Yeah, 57. I think he's about 38 or 9.
Well, there we go.
His experience is incredible in the way he reads the game and obviously talks to the others and knows when to give, when to keep the ball. He's just so, yeah, his technical expertise is amazing. But Bissouma, I agree with you, yeah, a good player too. And I hope, I don't know whether he's one that will go on and shine, but definitely would like to see him stay for a few more seasons. And yeah, he's been really good this season.
Well, Sally, it's been lovely speaking to you. Just quickly before we let you get going, I've got to press you for a score prediction. How do you see it going?
Well, Arsenal haven't been playing great recently in the Premier League, as you said. I think they've lost their last couple. So I'm going to go for a draw. I think Brighton will actually score another goal, but just one. So I'm going to say 1-1.
Okay, you're confident, and it's been absolutely lovely speaking to you. Thanks ever so much for your time. Sally Friedman there, who's a Brighton fan and journalist for Football Today. Feeling confident, and to be fair, who wouldn't be taking on Arsenal in the Premier League in the form they're in? There's outrage in the studio around me. There's gesticulation from Giles Anyam because we've just seen that second yellow Maitland-Niles on the screen again, and you're having none of it.
I am having none of it at all. That was play acting, simulation. It should get done.
Yeah, it won't happen.
It won't happen. Because
and then you've got morons like Dermot Gallagher coming on and saying, the amount of times where I've seen him, so I'm sure it was last season, you know, when Lacazette against Stoke, and he had like his toe was offside.
Yeah.
And definitely an offside. And all of a sudden you see these marginal calls, like the Harry Kane one, and people trying to say, yeah, definitely Harry Kane was onside because he wasn't...
100% not borderline.
Yeah. Anyway.
Anyway, back to Brighton.
Back to Brighton. Are you feeling confident?
I hope the players are, because we need to just get 3 points. Just to get a win.
Brighton are not a good side. We played them at the Amex and they weren't very good. We were just Arsenal away. And last season they beat us, but we weren't very good. We were just Arsenal away.
Mm. They're a team to me who feel a bit like the only reason they're going to stay up is because there are three teams worse than them.
Yeah.
It's
not
that there's any real merit there for Brighton.
No. I agree.
Yeah, I think we should be able to raise our confidence levels on Sunday.
Assuming they're not at rock bottom because we've lost 2-1.
Well, they will be. Well, yes. Yeah. Hopefully it'll be picked up midweek. With that in mind, are you confident for that? The Napoli performances surprised me, for one. Do you think we'll see a Europa League form continue distinct from Premier League form?
Yeah, I do.
You're confident, fully confident of a win?
Maybe the Napoli result kind of and performance has given me a false sense of hope, or a false sense of security. But yeah, I think the players will be focused. It'll be zeroed in on this. This is their chance. You know, blow this and that's it. You know, pretty much. So I think there'll be.
But that was the case against Leicester. It's like, you know, you've got to pick something up here, otherwise this is it. And but they still blew it.
I think there's, Johnny said earlier, there's a separation. There seems to be a separation between league and Europa League, and maybe they just think maybe Europa League is just it's because it's different, you know. It's not the pressure. It's a different kind of pressure than what the Premier League is. You know, they've had some good results, and you know, Emery's. Maybe they take confidence from Emery being so assured of himself in this competition that you know they just play differently. And I feel that. Maybe I'm wrong, but I just feel kind of confident that we're going to get through this time.
I said this during the break when we were just chatting off air. I think that this tie is essentially going to be determined at the Emirates based on if Valencia score. If they don't score, I feel very, very confident that we can get something. Because even if it finishes 0-0, I'd still fancy us to go away from home and score against them and do similar to what we did against Napoli. If we win 1-0, fine. If we win 2-0, brilliant. 3-0 plus, absolutely amazing. But for me, it's
not letting them have the away goal.
If they score, even if it's 3-1, you know, they only have to get one goal, and the fragility away from when they're at home at the Mustafa, the fragility of this the mental lack of mental strength of this Arsenal team, the psychological smashings that we've had, I would fear for us if it's 2-1, if it's 3-1, 4-1, bit different.
I think 3-1, I'd be happy with a 3-1, to be honest with you. Because again, I feel we can score over there. They'd have to, if we go over there with a 2-goal lead, 3-1, say, they have to come out. They have to come out and play us. And if we're compact and we're professional, do our jobs, I'm sure we can get a goal over there.
Compact and professional, you mean like not like we've been in the last three games?
Like when we went over to San Paolo.
Yeah, we need to replicate that Napoli performance. That's absolutely true. And in terms of how to approach that Brighton game, just quickly, what are you doing there? Are you going all guns blazing or are you a bit nervous that you have got undone recently?
I don't think Arsenal will lose that. I think that'll be relatively comfortable. Whoever
it's two home games, isn't it? It's Valencia at home and then Brighton at home. We don't have to rest anybody.
Yeah.
Go out and play them. Play them off the park.
It's all about confidence. Yeah. It's all about ignoring the losses. That, of course, was what Emery said before Leicester. Let's hope he's still saying it after Leicester. But it's that time in the show where I have to ask you guys for your score predictions. We've got two coming up. It's Valencia and then Brighton. What are you saying?
Shall I go first?
Yeah, you go first.
I think it's going to be 2-1 Arsenal against Valencia. I think we'll beat Brighton 2-0, 3-0, 2-0. I'd say that. I think Brighton will be a lot more comfortable, but Valencia is the one that scares me.
Valencia, you say, got Gamero in their ranks now.
Who's not doing that well, but Gamero and Rodrigo started up front in a 4-4-2, last one out.
Yeah, I'd say 3-1 Arsenal, and then against Brighton, 2-0.
And your score for Valencia, Chris?
2-1.
2-1. So we're confident. We spent the entire show saying the whole of Arsenal's squad are not fit to play football. Get in the bin. And yet we're predicting two wins from the next two. That's football, isn't it? That's football. That's football fans. Hopefully Champions League football for Arsenal. A improved transfer budget for Emery. An improved squad for us. Improved radio shows for you, probably. And nobody getting in the bin. Join us next week on the Arsenal Fan Show.
Is Love Sport.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments. River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Lowe's knows tough jobs call for tougher tools. The new DeWalt Elite Series power tool accessories are built to last for the pro who doesn't stop. With precision fitment, durability, and impact resistance, finishing jobs faster has never been easier. Shop the new DeWalt Elite Series at an everyday low price exclusively at Lowe's. We help, you save.